You're listening to The Deceptionists. On this episode, Dave, Caroline, and special guest Julia talk about the end and how you get there.
Won't be the last, I won't be the first. Fine. It's all right and all wrong. For me, it begins at the end of the road.
You are listening to The Deceptionists, Truth Through Fiction, a monthly or so podcast on the art and craft of writing, storytellers and stories. We attempt to bring a sense of community to the solitary life of the writer. I'm Caroline Pruitt. With me tonight is Dave Acampo.
Hey, everybody.
And Julia Linthicum, our very special guest.
Hello, everyone.
Julia is one of the super fans of the show. She's somebody who's really been with us since we started and has contributed a lot to some of our discussions on NaNoWriMo and some of the other topics. And I really jumped on the chance to get her to talk with us tonight and contribute to the subject that we have, which we've kind of been working up to, which is endings. We've talked about beginnings. We've talked about some things related to middles.
Oh, Caroline? But we're actually out of time. That's the end of the show. Sorry.
Okay. And when you
and
get
that
to
is the, how you end.
No. When you get to the end of a story, you want to have both the feeling of sadness that I had when Dave told me to stop talking, and yet still a feeling of completion, as though something has been accomplished and you didn't just waste your time reading/writing the story. Is that a way to start out talking about endings?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think this is a fascinating one to me because I think we've talked a lot about beginnings and how you get started. And I think we've even, in talking about plot, we've talked about middles. And I think middles are often the toughest part. But I think ending and really sticking the ending. I mean, how often have you thought, well, you know, that was a pretty good movie, but the ending, or maybe you thought that about a novel, you know, and there's something about endings and knowing when to end and knowing if it's the proper kind of satisfying conclusion. And I don't mean satisfying like a happy ending, but satisfying like you get to the full emotional arc that the writer wants you to feel in that story. So, and to me, as I started thinking about this, and I'll open this up to you guys, but I started thinking about how I work with endings. And so, for example, for me, a short story ending comes a lot easier than a longer form work. And my thought with a short story is that a short story to me, and again, this is just my personal, you know, way that I write a short story, is it's usually about one thing, some kind of change that's happening in that story. There's some shift in that story, but it's kind of crystallized around a single moment. And so when you get that moment, when you get to that moment, you may know that when you start, or you may find it as you go along, you kind of just know that that's the ending. And then it's just about making sure that the tone and the voice are right. And that may take a paragraph or it may take four, but you know, you're sort of, I have an easier time finding my way with that as opposed to a longer work. And yet those longer works are often more structured in their endings. And so we'll talk about the different types of, you know, endings. But I don't know, do you guys have any feeling about that in terms of short stories and longer works?
Julia, what kind of length do you usually work with? Because I know you've done the NaNo stories. Is that sort of a typical project for you?
That's a typical. For original fiction, I've done a lot more longer fiction lately than I've done shorter, which, the problem with NaNoWriMo is sometimes you have an idea of where the ending is coming, and sometimes you're just kind of like, please God, let me get to the end. Please God, let me figure out how to end and finish this just so that I can have a tying off point or something. So it's, but you know, the first NaNo I did, I had a very specific idea in my head of how it would end. And so it was just a case of structuring the point of from the beginning to the end of how do I get to there. Some of the others, I had no idea at all. where how it was going to end. And in one case, I didn't figure that out until I think a year later, where I was sort of like, ah, that's it. And it's sort of,
Sorry, I was just going to say, that's individual on just a project-by-project basis? Do you feel like the one where you don't know the ending is something that is either more freeing or somehow you just, maybe it's not the right idea at the time or something like that? Or is it just, it's just random? You know, this time I didn't know where I was going, but I wrote it that way. And the other time I just knew the end point and I aimed for it and, you know, got there.
I would have to say it's very dependent on the project, because in some cases I had a very specific, the first one was very straightforward epic fantasy, so in some ways it had, you know, more structure to it than something that was more of a mishmash of genres, which is what typifies most of my later ones. So honestly, there's no real good answer. There's sometimes when it's very clear, okay, this needs to happen at the end. And there are some cases where I'm like, well, I know where I'm moving towards, but I'm not necessarily sure where it stops.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's you say there's not a good answer, but I think that is the good answer, is that there isn't one. And it's probably pretty dependent upon how you came to the idea and how you're executing it. And, you know, there's no one way in fiction, obviously. I think you kind of mentioned something there that we talked about a little bit before the show, which is you mentioned a genre of epic fantasy and how it sort of gave you a direction. And so that's something I want to talk to you guys about, because I know you've both dealt with genres, and we've talked a lot about genres on this show. And I think it's very interesting to me that a genre, like let's say a murder mystery, an ending I think is a lot easier to identify in a murder mystery.
Yes.
You know, it's whodunit. And once you've got that resolved, maybe there's a little bit more, but, you know, you just wrap up the ends and there you go. An epic fantasy might have a quest involved, or, you know, overthrowing a evil king or something like that. But there's a mission or a quest, and then the end point kind of wraps up from there. But are there also dangers in this of And I brushed across this when we talked about it in the genre shows of those guideposts, including the ending goals, becoming cliche or something. You end up writing safely because you know, he slays the dragon and this happens. And do you take any precautions to make sure that your ending is sort of unique and anything like that?
Well, honestly, when I was thinking about, I was trying to think of like, what are some good endings to long pieces? Because I can't really talk from experience because I haven't really finished. I'm trying, I'm like sort of in the process of getting toward finishing really one of the longest things that I've written in a big chunk right now, but I can't really give advice, maybe next month. But I was thinking about things I've read that are in long form. And the ones where I kept coming, I'm like, oh, that's a really satisfying ending. That's an ending that works, was almost always crime or romance, something like a quest. And it's not necessarily that the story ends when the quest ends. Like I was thinking of, I know Paul and I talk a lot about Dennis Lehane, you've read him too, right, Julia?
I have not, actually.
So, but his first book, A Drink Before the War, has this, it's a very like high action book, like it's one thing after another happening in the story. And then when it ends, you have this sort of coda to it where it's basically like the two heroes, they get paid and then they go to the mall and they spend their money, which is like something you never see, you know, and then they like run into one of the bad guys and have a little sort of short encounter with him. And it's just a little bit of a bookend of the story. And that is what I think of, though, as being the great ending of that book. When I think of like a quest story, I think of sort of, you know, Bilbo at the end of The Hobbit. I do not necessarily think of Lord of the Rings with like the 8 or 9 different endings. But like at the end, you know, it's not so much like The Hobbit is an example of a book where like the ending almost, the climax almost happens like Bilbo's unconscious when they kill the dragon, basically. but you get him waking up, you get him sort of having all these things around him, the quest is over, and then you can do the resolution. So I think it's, when I think about the great endings that come to mind for me, they are in genre, but the ending that sticks with me is not itself the resolution of the problem. I don't really remember in that the mystery novel I referenced, I don't really even remember who the bad guy was. You know, I just remember that encounter at the end of the book.
Well, that may touch a little bit on something else that I was thinking about, which is wrapping up a plot, tying off those loose ends, ending the quest, that kind of thing, versus the actual emotional arc, which I think is what we as readers really are waiting for. I mean, I don't know how you guys define it, but I think of, you know, I read stuff or watch films or read comic books or read books to feel something. And I think the job of the writer is to give you that sort of experience, you know, walk a mile in these shoes and feel what these characters feel. And, you know, that's not always a wrap up to the plot. That often comes from what the characters go through. And the plot is just the physical actions that they did, you know, to, you know, everything that happened in there, the obstacles that they face and everything, but how they overcome it. And then I think, whether it's genre or not, I mean, I think there needs to be that sort of, you mentioned it, you said, like, you know, the dragon is slain, the quest ends, Bilbo, and then you can set up the resolution. But there has to be that sort of, I think the character has to sort of come to a resting place a little bit. You know, I mean, there's no real endings in fiction or in lives, you know, except when people die. And, you know, even that's debatable by some. So, but I remember reading that essay on this show early on. And I'm going to forget who wrote it now. But it was about Margaret Atwood wrote that metafictional essay about endings. It was called Happy Endings. And I won't repeat it all here, but it was basically that the only true ending is, you know, that the two characters die, you know, but the story may be, you know, what happens, you know, their marriage and their divorce or something like that. It may, you know, you choose a chunk of time. It could just be them falling in love and then realizing that they can't be together. And that could be your story. You know, it's any, you pick a point on there. So especially in a genre piece like that, I think beyond just wrapping up the plot, it's something about the character changing and realizing something or failing to change in a darker story, perhaps. but coming to some sort of point, and, you know, I think, what am I trying to say here? Even like a murder mystery, let's go back to that for a minute. You know, it's that, you mentioned that coda, that little piece at the end. There's something about those end pieces that just, I've completely lost where I'm going with this. Do you guys know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of payoff at the end for you as a reader, in other words.
And sometimes if that really works, I can kind of forgive the part of my head that's going, okay, that particular mechanism didn't really work to finish the plot. I'm not sure I really bought that guy being the murderer, but if, you know, did I come into the story because I actually really care who killed the butler, or do I want to know how the detective was going to work out whatever was going on with them? And usually if I like that character and if that payoff is there, then, you know, there are authors who I think are great and I don't care about their plots.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that there's something, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. It's like you need to give the character that moment, and maybe it's a realization or maybe it's something else that goes on. There's something, okay, so Caroline, we talked about recently a Lawrence Block book, and the title is now escaping me.
The Sacred Gin Mill.
When the Sacred Gin Mill Closes, right. And we talked about that on the Fuzzy Typewriter Book Club. And that is a murder mystery, kind of, you know, it's a crime, it's a mystery novel, it's resolved, and he sort of resolves it towards the end, but there's something about, in that one also, there's sort of an end piece where the character then is saying, but that all happened a long time ago, and he starts to, in film terms, I think of it as slowly panning back and just looking at the whole landscape, because he sort of looks at the whole timeline, what's happened to the city, and it's also about him, and he creeps, his own personal stuff about his alcoholism and everything sort of creeps into this, and I think that's the kind of effect that gives a little more closure than just, this is the whodunit. I should say that it's a little more satisfying. It feels more like a character piece than just knowing who killed who. You know, I now I also want to mention that there's also something that's very famous, and that's like an open ending versus sort of a closed ending. And I think literary fiction, and especially short fiction, tends to go with an open ending more often. And by that I mean, just to define that, is sort of that it's not a complete closure. Maybe it's not a whodunit, and it's not about who solved what, but there's sort of this open ending where something still has changed in the character or in the characters. Something shifted, but you don't get a, and then they went off and then this happened to them. You get the sense that life continues in some way, but I think to get that right, you still have to have that feeling that the character has changed in some way. But you don't necessarily have to close off that whole world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we actually had a question on that from one of our audience, which is Cammie, who's Nerdy Girl, N-U-U-R-D-Y Girl on Twitter, says, I'd love to know your thoughts on a super final ending versus an open ending. Do you want the reader to imagine beyond the end? I guess, what are some advantages of an ending that really wraps everything up?
Well, in Harry Potter terms, no one else can use your character, right?
Yeah. I was thinking of the Harry Potter epilogue as the good or bad ending, you know? That's an interesting question. You know, are there endings where you sit there and go, I mean, I think the Hunger Games series is another one where Caroline and I both kind of went, well, I don't know about the ending.
But I like the epilogue. Whereas Harry Potter, the last Harry Potter book, I love the way that the story works out. But I really did not need the chapter of who everybody married and they're meeting up in the train station. I feel like that was accomplishing something besides telling the story.
Had an agenda, in other words.
Right. And whereas the Hunger Games ending, it was a little bit more sort of what was her emotional place after this happened, which with that book that was basically just about these characters being repeatedly traumatized.
Right.
I feel like if you don't have that ending, I feel like it's missing something. I don't know.
That's interesting. I didn't read the last Harry Potter book, so I don't really know, you know, how that plays in writing. I just saw the films. But I did read The Hunger Games, and I kind of felt like you did about that epilogue, I guess, which to me, it wasn't so much about who married who or who settled down with who, but it was just sort of that, like, you, I think what you said is what I was feeling about it, is just these traumatized characters and that sort of the scars that last, and it's, and almost telling you what happened is almost just sort of, yeah, this happened, but there's something under that, which is nothing is ever the same at this point, you know?
But Julia, did you have a different viewpoint on that?
I think that there was, I know that there were some points where I don't know whether to.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
Yeah, that's why I try not to spoil it. Yeah, sure. I try not to, but I know there were certain elements of it that I was sort of unsure if it was true to the character, I think was more my concern. I think what you mean about the emotional undercurrent, though, is true. You know, the scars and how it was, you know, things go on. In some ways, life goes on after it. But
and I know some people, because I think Rebecca on Book Rages was talking about how she threw the book at the ending of the last Hunger Games because she didn't like it. And I think she was the one who said that. And then some other people just like really felt like that ending was a betrayal of what, or at least it was a betrayal of the story they were reading. Like they were reading a story for Katniss to get to a particular point, and that was not where the author took her. So I think, and that's not like, I think sometimes that's an honest reaction. You know, I know that I read things where I'm like, oh, come on, that is not the story. I can give is always a good, terrible example. I just read The Host, which is Stephanie Meyer's novel that is not a Twilight novel, which is actually, to my surprise, the first like maybe third of it is this really interesting, you know, kind of complex science fiction setup that just goes on in this complete, and it's almost, it doesn't quite change genres, but it changes, I think it sort of changes the deal that I thought that I had made when I started reading the book. Mm-hmm. Like, it goes on, like, it basically, the resolution of the book has to do with basically a romantic issue, which, because of the, this basically, okay, the main narrative of this book is like a parasite who lives inside this human woman's body, who is like a body snatcher, who is like, and so basically the actual resolution of the book turns out to be about the dude that this parasite fell in love with. I'm not making this up, but that really, that didn't seem to me. So I kind of felt with that book that it didn't finish the story it started. And I think some people got, as particularly I think people who read the first Hunger Games book and then as the trilogy went on, didn't go in that direction. Mm-hmm. So, but then it's
but
sort of
is that reader expectation versus mm-hmm. like, well, okay, let's look at it back from the writer's point of view for a minute.
Okay.
We're writers. Yes. So, right, yeah. So if we're writing something, I mean, we can't take into account what everybody's going to want out of a given story. So
sure.
We just have to make sure that we're not cheating in any way. In other words, mm-hmm. we're not setting up something to go this way and then going a different way just because we don't, I don't even sure why you'd want to do that actually, as I say that, but you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, you could set up something that's sort of a red herring, but I mean, you don't mm-hmm. want to, I think, you know, if it's bad writing, it's bad writing. You know, if you're setting mm-hmm. up something going a certain way and then you suddenly do a 180 and, you know, double back or, you know, take a weird left or right turn, you can really throw your audience out. So we need to be aware of that. But we certainly can't cater to, you know, the audience and going like, okay, well, what's the reaction to the Hunger Games first book? And then I should
right.
tailor my second book to that or, you know, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's okay. I will say that we're writing a series or writing a trilogy or something like that might be different than writing a one shot where, you know, I mean, gearing your endings in that sense is got to be very different because you're having to think further ahead as well.
Mm-hmm. So thinking ahead, so Julie, you kind of already answered this, but Caroline, how about you? Do you think that you write mostly when you know your ending? How important is it to know that ending?
Let me go back to what we were talking about at the beginning
sure.
about
we'll,
short
I'll
versus
say,
long.
I'm going to make a note and save that for later.
Oh, no, because this leads up to what you're saying.
Okay.
Because short and long are different.
Yes.
The long piece I'm writing now, I actually have, well, you know, the outline I got to what I thought was sort of the climactic piece, and then I have a few. I need something that will accomplish this emotional thing by the end of the story. So I don't have all the beats in, but I basically knew where I wanted the characters positioned. And so, like, sort of my trauma with that has been I'm, like, trying to make sure that the things that I had outlined continue to work. And that it's not like people are not going to hunt me down when they read the end of the story because I made them want one thing and it's going to go another way. And by the way, some writers want people to hunt them down. With shorts, I really like if I know something is going to be, you know, 5,000 words ish range. I usually have an idea and I want to see where the idea goes. So I can't think of a situation where I've written a short piece to an ending. I don't tend to write. For one thing, sometimes I get to a point that I thought was within the story, and then I was like, oh, that ends it. Other times I wrote to what I thought was the ending, and it's just really the ending of the first scene, and then the thing that comes next and next and next kind of builds on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as far as actual, like, the sort of the line or the actual writing to end the story on, I went back and looked at some of my short pieces and I was sort of like categorizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's one that I call the Law and Order ending, which is that especially like if you watch, like I haven't watched Law and Order, I will say for like 10 years, but it used to be that they would end with like Adam, the old dude, and then the other guy would go be in the elevator and one of them would say, well, what do you think this, and then the other one goes this, and then the elevator closes and it kind of ends with them having this sort of profound and ambiguous moment of dialogue.
Right.
See,
okay,
to watch a Law and Order rerun and look for that,
right
and you will see it, because I tend to end on those either with sort of kind of sad note or something that's almost like a punchline for the story. Like the sort of somehow when I started the story, I was telling this joke and the joke's going to pay off at the end. I don't necessarily know what the joke is going to be. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, that does. Yeah. That does.
And it's not necessarily humor. It's not necessarily something that's funny. Well, because another thing I've mentioned with short fiction is that I tend to go for the dynamic one character is keeping a secret and the other one is finding it out. So it has to be and I'll, my probably the story that I'm always sort of unconsciously ripping off is there's a story called Roman Fever by Edith Wharton. I'll see if I can find a link to that because it might be up online. And it's a really it's basically that. It's these two characters having this conversation, and one of them has a secret, and the story kind of ends on a punchline where one of the characters tells the other that it's not, that everything is not the way she thought it was, because she had this piece of information the other one didn't. Mm-hmm. And so it's not at all funny, except if you have like a mean sense of humor. But it still has kind of that structure of a joke. And I think that that's one interesting way to think about, you know, and as when you're telling a joke, you don't want to keep dragging it out. Once you've made the point, don't keep saying it again and again and again. And, you know, you leave the room on your best line. You don't, you know, sort of stick around and try to tell sort of like weaker things or where you have.
Don't try to explain
yes.
the joke.
Oh, yes. And I get into trouble with that with like workshop stories because I will have what I think is a great punchline. And then people are like, why did he say that? What exactly was the, and I'm like, no, like, you know, and sometimes I'll stick to it and sometimes I'm like, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you... Okay, I think I've said enough things, but I can come up with stories or films or novels that have good punchlines for a long time.
Oh yeah, as we're talking, I keep thinking about endings of things, and I'm like, but I don't want to spoil that, you know?
Right.
But so to kind of go back to what you were saying too, you know, I started off talking about how I felt about short and longer stories and their endings, and so to look at my own work similarly, you know, I've talked about this on the show a number of times, but the Smitty story that I wrote on this show actually, or for this show, that was one where I didn't know where I was going with it, and again, it goes back to that feeling. I didn't think of it in terms of somebody's holding a secret or anything. I tend to think about moments, like what is the inevitable thing that this is all heading towards. And so I just set up a situation. I didn't know where it was going. I just knew that there was this character, Smitty, and then I knew that there had to be a reason that he was coming into the picture. And so I just kept writing. So I didn't know, for example, that, you know, the narrator on this one was going to end up, you know, putting a gun to his ex-girlfriend's head or anything like that. It just, there came a point as I was writing that I thought, this is the only way this is going. You know,
How far were you from the end? Actually, that's a good story to ask that about. How far were you from the end of the story before you realized that he was going to kill the girl?
It's really hard for me to say because I wrote it maybe over a couple of days. Uh-huh. And so I'm not sure exactly when it came to be. I'm going to guess and say maybe halfway through. But it might have been even a little further. I just knew that Smitty would want to hatch a plan and all this kind of stuff, but I knew that this guy, it wasn't going to go well. It wasn't professionally. This wasn't like a hit on the boyfriend or the new boyfriend or anything like that. I knew it wasn't going to go like that. But then, just somewhere along the line, I realized that, and maybe to think of it in your terms, Caroline, I knew that the narrator had a secret that he was holding back, that he was capable of this, and that and maybe he didn't even know that, but that's what he was leading. What he didn't even know he was heading towards, but at a certain point he realized that. And so maybe he and I realized it at the same time, you know, but it's maybe, you know, halfway through, two thirds of the way through. And it's like, this is what's going to happen. There's no other option out of this, you know, for him. Now with longer works, it's actually a little bit of a mixed bag because I've talked about my audio show Wormwood on this show a number of times. And in that one, again, I also had a lot of other writers working with me, but we developed a basic concept where we knew that the first season was a mystery and we knew that it would end with the reason why Dr. Xander Crowe came to the town of Wormwood. and that would resolve, but it would also open a doorway to, it would resolve around a supernatural object that would then open up a new mystery, which is, what is this thing all about? And so then I knew that the end of the series would be about what that thing is and how you end that story. So we kind of knew in two stages over the three seasons that, and so we had that direction to aim toward. And again, that goes back to our, you know, concrete endings and our genres. You know, this was a murder mystery, a weird sort of supernatural mystery in the first one. And then I guess it's still a mystery. It's, what is this thing and what does it do? And how do we, you know, get rid of it, was the end goal. And so everything we're writing is towards that end goal. But things could shift all around, and the details of how it resolves could change. And then kind of in more of the medium length, or, well, sticking with that, I think a trickier one for me is novels. And I've only done one, and it was a National Novel Writing Month, a NaNoWriMo, and it, again, was in this same world, and I knew the ending. I knew that it had to start with, you know, Dr. Xander Crowe in a certain state, and it had to end with him, a very significant event in his life, which is him receiving this weird grisly hand that he has attached to his wrist at the beginning of the series. And then when Jeremy and I sat down to write the comic book that we're working on now, it was the same sort of thing. We knew that it had to end right before Wormwood started. And we know how it ends because Wormwood starts with talking about this event that just happened, an exorcism that did not work out well. So we knew going in, okay, it's going to end there, but then everything else is about how you get to that point. So I've often written, all those things were written with an ending in mind, even if it shifted slightly. And in some cases, we're trapping ourselves in our own continuity where it's like, it has to end this way because everything else has been published.
I was going to ask, you know, how constrained did you feel by having yourself locked into, okay, I know where these characters end up, or how, you know, the whole prequel question that always comes up of, yeah. You know,
I will not lie. I will tell you that there were a few times where I felt a little constrained, where I'm like, oh, I wish we didn't have to end it that way, you know? And that's because we've got sort of a mystery set up, but we know the ending. Well, not everybody knows the ending, but if you listen to it, if you're a Wormwood fan, you know the ending. So we're kind of just working within those constraints and trying to find the creativity and the twists and turns that we can put within that. But we know, you know, and again, talking about not just plot wrap-up, but we know where the character should be emotionally, because it should be where he is at the start of the audio series. So it's definitely that working within a world and sort of build and a timeline, and then sort of giving yourself those endings. And then the challenge is a little bit different. The challenge is now, you know, how do I make this work, not just where can this possibly go, you know, which is a little different, but we're making it work for that.
Okay.
Can we
hang on a second? Can I?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because your comment about twisting made me wonder about, what is your feeling about the twist or the shock ending, you know, that seems to permeate a lot of genre fiction.
Julia,
yeah.
You know what the twist is? That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh God.
So obviously we were both getting there. So Dave, I guess you were asked the question first.
So how do I feel about like a shock ending or a twist ending? Mm-hmm. I guess for me, I like a good twist ending as long as it's true to the characters and what was set up. I mean, I think we've seen certain left field twists where it feels like the hand of the writer. Like, oh, well, they went to do this. And I don't know about you guys. I mean, as a writer at this point, I tend to watch like any or read any kind of mystery. And if it's a Hollywood sort of formula, I'll sit. I won't necessarily be able to predict it. I'm not like one of those people like, that's the killer. But what I'll do is I'll go, well, it could be A, for this reason, B, for this reason, or C, for this reason. We'll see which one they go with. You know, and you kind of just figure out, you kind of think ahead of all the structure of what writers could do with this.
I think with the TV stuff especially, the certain formulas with Castle and NCIS especially, I've gotten to the point where I can go, okay, that's it. That's where the twist is coming. Because I can almost see, you can see, you know, there's only however many minutes left. It's like, nope, that's not the ending. There's one more thing we haven't heard yet. And yeah, it's sort of like you can see, you know, the gears moving on that one.
Yes,
but
yes.
That's actually why I stopped watching Law & Order 10 years ago, because I had a roommate who said, oh, it's the wife. It's always the wife. It's the girlfriend. It's the prettiest girl or it's the ugliest girl.
Right.
And it's, you know, and that's not 100% of the time. But if you look at the sort of, you know, actual crime statistics versus who did it on Law & Order, it's very frequently a female.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, like, that sort of there's a setup that you're not going to expect that. But the problem is if you start to expect it when they do it every time, because the husband will be the one with the obvious motive and the wife has the less obvious motive, then you just look for the second most obvious motive.
Right. And in your example, Julia, I think it's always either the first or second person they interview but then let go on Castle is always the killer. You know?
Especially if you oh, that person was on a show before.
Yeah, exactly. if they're a recognizable actor.
Yeah, the fugitive.
Or God forbid, if they have a guest starring a law enforcement person, they're going to be the one that's going to betray everyone. I swear, I've seen that twist so many times. I'm like, would you please, for once, you know, have a reputable law enforcement person who isn't, you know.
But there's something comforting about a mystery structure that way, too. I mean, and so maybe, you know, I don't want to get off too much off of the subject of endings and just talk about mystery and formula. But obviously those formulas, you know, work on television because they get ratings and people seem to like them. And so maybe there's something about the audience participation in that regard.
Something comforting in knowing how it ends.
Yeah, kind of. Or thinking that you're predicting it, you know, along with it. I mean, maybe everybody's doing that and they're just, you know, enjoying that fact that, like, oh, it's going to be one of them. Oh, who's it going to be? And then you have to keep watching to see who it is.
Let me mention, though, there's a particular kind of twist that I find interesting. Interesting in the sense of fatal to a story. And a writing workshop I took in college, I think was the professor there was the first one who pointed this out. And I think this guy had written this story that's like about this kid who's in the alley and he's like held up by a burglar and they have like a long conversation where the burglar's got the gun pointed at him. And it's like basically he's either going to shoot him or he's not going to shoot him. And either way, that ending is likely to feel kind of cheap because you're sort of – so unless you find like a better – like unless you're like Flannery O'Connor writing, you know, A Good Man is Hard to Find, she had a really sort of artistic way of doing the twist. And – or I talked a while ago about a Lawrence Block story that's about an assassin and where he sort of is following this guy around and getting to know him. And you're like, okay, the ending of the story is either going to be that, oh, he gets to like the guy and he quits being an assassin, or he, even though he gets to like the guy, he kills him anyway. And either way, you kind of and I think Block gets around it by he has that extra act in the story where it turns out that the story is actually about something totally different than whether you choose A or B. I'd outlined a story that's basically about this guy who has a friend who has sort of come into this powerful position. The protagonist knows a secret about the friend and sort of goes in to confront him and is planning to kill him. And then the friend kind of tries to talk him out of it and kind of get him to go over to the dark side, basically. I could not really finish the story because I was like, either way this goes, it's going to be – it's like the story is going to end up being about the twist. It's either – does that make any sense? Like I think if you really sort of key a character dilemma and make that be the ending – if it seems like you're trying to make it be a surprise either way, it's very hard for that actually to work because I think of what you guys are talking about where the reader can see the gears. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that does. And that's very interesting. I hadn't really thought about it in that way. But so is that something about – perhaps that's a weakness in the plot device?
I think so.
So you're sort of forcing a twist on it where it's either going to go A or B, but neither one is really unique to the character. And maybe in your case, your first example of the person with, there's, you know, a guy talking in an alleyway with a guy with a gun, it's the guy with the gun that's doing the action. So mm-hmm. there's nothing for the character. It's just a flip of a coin. It's this or that. Mm-hmm. Neither right. one affects the arc of the character. I mean, well, obviously he either stops breathing or, you know, or yeah. he goes on. But so to me, maybe the workaround on that is to focus on the character at gunpoint, which is okay. And then to me, he almost can't get shot. Uh-huh. Because there's nothing to do with the character, but if he survives that, what happens next is what's interesting to right. me. Does he go out and just eat a steak, rare steak, and say, "Oh, I love life," you know? Or you know, I mean, I guess I, and the only other exception to that, I'm thinking of another short story now. Is have either of you read Tobias Wolff's story called "Bullet in the Brain"? A Bullet in the Brain, I think it's called.
Oh no,
and that one is interesting because it sort of shifts that paradigm again. It is about a guy who's a critic, a very nasty sort of book critic, and he's in the bank just doing his banking. I think it's a bank, and someone comes in and they end up shooting. And they shoot him, and the bulk of the short story is about the bullet as it's entering his brain, and it's kind of this backwards trajectory of his life as he, you know, like your life flashing before your eyes, but yeah. it's peeling away the layers of, you know, of all the stuff that he doesn't like about his life and about his life as a critic and all these judgments, and it goes right back down to his childhood and the last memory that he has as the bullet goes through his brain is how he first fell in love with language. And it's this beautifully depicted scene where he's out in the field and he's playing shortstop or left field, or I can't remember what it is. He's playing something baseball, and there's someone there who gets to play the position they want to play. And the kid says to him, like, "I want to be the shortstop. That's the best position they is." And he's like, "They is." And he's like, he's fascinated by that change in the language, and he's just sitting out there in the outer field with his mitt thinking about that phrase, they is, and that's the last thing he thinks about. So complete, but so going to endings, I mean, this is a way where he structured the whole story to get to peel away the layers of this character and get to the core of what made him love language in the first place, which has nothing to do with the bullet or the robber or anything. It's just a way of doing that whole, you know, what's at the core of this character.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I realized that the Michael Chabon story that was in the New Yorker a couple weeks ago that Josh Christie had reviewed on iFanboy, is one of those stories that it's about these sort of two characters and there's a mystery in their past. And I was reading that whole story going, okay, there's no way he's going to end this because whatever the payoff of turns out to be, it's not going to live up to, you know, what the mystery is. And then he kind of swerves and goes another way with it at the end of the story that it ends up working. It sounds like a sort of similar, like I want to say, because I'm like, I don't, if people haven't got a chance to read that,
I haven't read it yet, and I really want to.
So, it's the one that's kind of about Stanley and Jack Kirby, even though it's not.
Yeah, I've heard about it, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet, so I look forward to reading it.
So I'll be interested in sort of you guys take, if you get to that. But I think he did... And you know, I'm not surprised with Chabon because he knows what he's doing. But I'm like, I was like kind of worried about it. And that's one thing that I think that I really like in short fiction, actually, is, and I guess I'm talking more as a reader now than as a writer, and I'm sorry. But it's kind of like, it's like watching like an ice skater, like, are they going to stick the landing? Like you see them sort of doing something tricky. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to think, how can I turn that around into a writing question? How is that, if what we admire about short fiction, or about short fiction particularly, though, is mm-hmm. sort of watching an author keep all these balls in the air and see how that's going to end. And I guess that's not, balls in the air is bad, right? Because the only way you end with juggling is you drop them, right?
You know, I think, so from a writing perspective, I mean, I think the danger there is that, and this may touch on something that we may go into, which is when you're done with it versus when the story's done. But,
yeah.
I think that is my struggle with endings is... have I satisfied everything? You know, and I don't mean like, is everybody happy? I just mean, Are readers going to read this, and is there something I'm missing? Is there a ball still, you know, that I didn't fail to catch that I had thrown up, you know, or something like that? Is there something in there? And you can drive yourself crazy doing that, I think, you know, and yeah. really second guessing it. I think that's maybe the stage where you take it to revision and you start showing it to other people and see how it plays. Because a lot of times you're more critical of certain things. And maybe you also need a break from it. And then you come back and you're like, hey, you know what? That is pretty good. Because I think that that can be a danger. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question really anymore, but yeah, I mean, that's, I think you do the best you can to really just sort of, what was the main point of this story? Some people like to think in terms of themes. I just like to think in terms of characters, like, you know, what did my narrator, my protagonist, you know, what was he going through? And does this ending here, does that make my point that I'm trying to get across, or does that reveal that truth about that character that I'm trying to get across? Like, he would do this because we can feel it from that. And if I've got that, then I think you've got that satisfying thing. And the plot stuff can all be hemmed, you know, later, right. But you really want to be able to feel like, okay, that character shifted. He's in this place now. He's looking at the world a little differently because of what happened.
So it's not what he's going to do. First of all, it's not the same thing he would have done in the same situation at the beginning of the story. And it's not the same thing that every character in that situation would do.
Right.
So those are, like, I think, two ways that you need to make sure that the ending feels right. That if it's something any character could do, it's just kind of arbitrary.
Right.
And if it's exactly, unless your point is that this guy never learns.
Right. Which is another valid thing too. Uh-huh. Failing right. to overcome that obstacle or failing mm-hmm. to change in some way is a valid ending too. Uh-huh. But in that one's a tricky one, but the reader has to go along with it and see that he maybe wanted to and saw that glimmer of hope, but then buried himself at that last minute and didn't do it, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, that sort of self-defeating thing or whatever it was, went back to his, you know, alcoholism or whatever it is, you know, went, you know, did something and retreated back and didn't make it. I think that can be a very powerful thing too, because it's all about that relatable quality. We want to follow somebody, and we can empathize and we can relate to somebody failing to change because we've seen that in ourselves, you know, but we need to see the glimmer of the hope of change, I think, to make that work. You know, the other one is, you know, they have to have that. They start off with that hope of changing something or shifting something. And then, you know, it's about them surmounting that obstacle. And maybe it looks like they can't, but then it shifts. But it has to be, like you said, it can't just be any character can do this. But it's got to be, this person is doing it, and why? They're doing it because it means this to them. It does this for them, and they're shifting because of that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I'm just trying to figure out if we go. So do we want to sort of, we've talked about sort of structural endings. Any other kind of sort of type of ending that we want to hit on? Because I think we've kind of got the genre dictated ending. We've got the sort of character driven ending. We've got the twist ending and what might be the ups and downs of that.
I think the only other thing I would just mention, and I don't really know what I want to say about this, is the abrupt ending, which is a little different than the open ending. And I'm thinking here of, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's something, there's a recent movie, I'm going to get the names in the wrong order, but it's May Marlene or something like that. Martha, Marcy, May Marlene. And that is a sort of paranoid thriller type of movie. It's very subtle, very quiet. It just fills the whole thing with this creeping dread. And then it has this very abrupt open ending. And you have no idea what's supposed to happen. That's a film where I think the ending really works, because that's the point of the story, is to build this thing and to not know, or that you don't know when something's going to happen, but you're just sort of in this suspense of waiting for something to happen. And I think it can be effective, but I think it's hard. I think a different one is, have either of you guys seen from a few years ago the Coen Brothers movie?
A
Serious Man.
Yeah.
Yes, and that abrupt ending.
Doesn't he just kind of look? A lot of indie films kind of do that. Like, yeah. He's sort of looking at the clouds, and I'm like, oh. And sometimes, like, what was the one with Julianne Moore is married to Annette Bening? What is the name of that?
Oh, The Kids Are All Right?
The Kids Are All Right. Yeah. That was a film where I kind of, and I, which I did, I didn't dislike the film, but I kind of felt like it just kind of ended before they'd resolved anything.
Yeah.
Like it really was just, not, it was, that was not, this is open and ambiguous. That felt like we didn't write the third act, so just take what we wrote.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one that I mentioned on a recent podcast with Cameron Rice, but it is a movie I saw. I mean, I love, you know, creepy stuff. I'm writing a comic book about exorcism, so I had to go and watch the, what was that recent one? I'm forgetting. I've already forgotten. The Devil Inside. And that one is an abrupt ending that does not work. I mean, it really does feel like what you just said. Like, we didn't know where to go with it. We just had to end it here. And what made it worse, and I don't think this was intentional, but I think it accumulated in a horrible way, which is that the movie ends abruptly, and then there's a URL to go to learn more at the end. And that pissed people off.
Oh my God.
This is a transmedia failure, if you want to use that terminology, because people are already feeling like it's an abrupt ending, and I don't think it would have been satisfying anyway. But then to put that URL on the screen, that was like a slap in the face. Like,
have I already told my Blair Witch Project story on this podcast?
Well, that's another good example of that sort of abrupt ending.
I think it's not too bad to spoil the Blair Witch Project after like 11 years.
Yeah, I think you're safe. There's sort of a moratorium on that, right? There's a statute of limitations.
That movie actually, I mean, that's kind of because they have the camera and kind of it goes off and presumably it ends where it does because the witch has got them and she's got his friend like up against the wall, but you never see the witch. It just it goes black. I saw that in the first weekend it was out when it was like a phenomenon in like a packed movie theater. At that point of the film, when the credits come up, guy in the back of the theater jumps up and goes, "Bullshit, man! Refund!"
That's exactly what happened in this movie too, by the way.
Yeah, but so I was like, for a long time, when I would like go to something I didn't like the end of it, I'd be like, "Refund!"
But I think the abrupt ending can be really effective. It's just one of the trickiest ones to pull off because you're gonna throw people like that guy, you know. But I think the Blair Witch, it ends as it has to, and I think
what else did you expect?
Yeah, exactly. Especially as one of those first like found footage movies, there's no other way you can really do that. This one, it's a little more structured. It's a little more screenplay-ish, and they don't take it to a satisfying place, and then they end it abruptly. But like the Coen Brothers thing, there's some craft at work there, and there's a subtle message going on under there. And so when they end it abruptly like that, they're kind of making a point with that abrupt ending. The same thing with the Marcy May Marlene movie. And so I think those can be really effective, and they leave you sort of walking away thinking about the ending almost more than any other film. But it's probably one of the trickiest ones to pull off. So I just thought I'd mention it.
That is kind of a literary fiction ending. When I wrote a lot, and I was going to go and look at the last lines of all my like literary fiction stories, but I think my graduate school thesis is not on this computer, so I didn't really. but I know like with some of the classes I was in, we read. We read a lot of Chekhov, and Chekhov is kind of it takes a while to get it, but that his sort of emotional climaxes don't come at the end of the story. It's sort of you get to the ending and then you realize when the emotional climax was, which might have been a while ago. But there is kind of a sort of a way of writing like the last couple paragraphs. It's almost sort of like the swelling outro of the story that you sort of know you're coming to the end. It's maybe kind of pretentious, but I know that was a device that I tried to use a lot. I was like, okay, this is just going to end with these characters being uncertain about their future. So I will.
It's a bold.
I will write a lot about the uncertainty and what the uncertainty feels like. That's sort of like, but you just kind of like, if it has sort of a very short ending, that's just a couple sentences, and then you kind of just stick that, it obviously it's one of those things like it's a trick.
Yeah,
it's still literary. It's a trick, and it's great if it works. And if it doesn't, look like a pretentious. It's the same kind. It's the same thing as having a twist in like a pulp story, or a trick ending in a pulp story. Only you're more pretentious. So.
Yeah. No, so absolutely. And I think literary fiction is especially short fiction. The open ending, abrupt ending is really just kind of an open ending. I notice it more in films because it doesn't often happen in films. Probably because most of the films we see have that real strong three act structure, and it all has to come to this nice conclusion, and it's all that way. So you notice them when they shift away from that,
right? And you don't know how much time is left, especially if you're seeing it in the movie theater and you're not like looking at the counter.
Yeah.
So it's not like, and Kindle books, if I don't have like the percentage thing on, or even if like if you're reading an ebook, you're not like looking at the size of the number of pages decrease.
Does that change your reading experience then?
A little bit, because especially sometimes. If I'm wrapped up in it. Yeah, go ahead, Julia.
Yeah, no, I've just started with Kindle, and it does change it a little, you know, from having the physical book and seeing, you know, I'm almost done versus, you know, the Kindle experience, which is sort of like, well, there, how many more screens are there? I have no idea.
Especially because when I first got one, I didn't learn that, like, if you have the percentage on, usually the book ends at like 91 or 92 because there's back material.
Yeah.
So if I'm counting to go toward, you know, 100%, but I'm not actually getting to 100%. So I'm like, oh, okay, that was the last chapter.
How interesting, because I hadn't thought about this, but this is, and maybe this fits in with our endings discussion, but how often do you check to see how much you have left? I do it with films. I do it with audiobooks, like the Lawrence Block one, as you recall, Caroline. I read I listened to an audio, and I was actually sitting there going like, wait a minute, there's 24 minutes left. How is he going to wrap this all up? And so I'm sort of testing myself to see like if I can figure out where we are. And, you know, I even do that reading, you know, books, you know, like to see how much more is left in a chapter, let's say,
Do you actually check the running time of a film before you go to it?
Not before I go to it necessarily, unless I'm like, I don't feel like a long film, like a 3-hour movie tonight. Right, so check. But if I'm watching something on DVD, I will find myself pausing to see how much is left. Now, sometimes it's because I'm bored. But sometimes it's because I want to figure out how much is left in the story and kind of gauge where they're going with it. And I think maybe I'm kind of subconsciously examining the craft without really thinking about it.
But that's a difference in watching indie films in the theater, I think.
Is that if
it's one of those, like, I can't tell what the structure is, so I don't know when to expect the ending. So, and sometimes, like, what reading just things on the, like, if I'm reading some sort of fiction that is published on the internet, and I don't really know how, it's just that I'm going to the bottom of the screen, but I don't know how much it's going to take up because I'm still just scrolling and scrolling. Sometimes it's just, I'm not able to figure out the structure because it's not that well done, but sometimes I'm just, I don't have the same expectations because I don't have a sort of size in mind.
Yeah.
For the story.
And sort of related, but, I just finished reading a comic book miniseries, Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes. Paul and I just talked to Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hardman on the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast. So it was really fascinating. I had to tell them, I said, you know, it's really interesting because I was reading and I was reading up to issue 3 and I didn't really know exactly where you guys were going with it. And really in the final, this is a 4-issue comic book miniseries. So, you know, this is roughly like a feature film. It's like I didn't really realize until that 4th issue, and it all just sort of slammed into place, and I got it, and I said, oh, this is where you're going. And I told them, I said, that was a compliment in my mind, because there's so many things that you start reading, and you know exactly where they're going. And so I felt like they kind of kept some of their cards close to the vest and then laid it all out, and I didn't see where it was going until it was all there, and then it fit perfectly as a prequel. So, Julia, going back to your question about, you know, the prequel and how constrained you are, they actually worked really neatly, even though their story is set 20 years prior to the original Planet of the Apes film. It sets really neatly to inform that film in new and unique ways, and that was a great ending for me because I didn't see that coming, but it was that satisfying sort of film on paper in this you know, it was a very cinematic sort of screenplay on paper in my mind, but it ended nicely in that final little bit, so I have to give him credit for that. That was a good way to do that.
So do you, if I know, Dave, that you talk back and forth with a lot of people when you're writing, like, you,
yes,
do you sort of dole out when you're going to tell the person what the ending is, Or do you always say, okay, here's a summary of the plot, now read the story and see if that works? Does that make sense? Like, do you want them to find the surprise when they're reading it, or do you think it's just as good if you tell them what it's going to be and see if you accomplished it?
So do you mean with somebody that I'm collaborating with?
No, not a collaborator. Like, if you're writing your own story, but you're
like a beta reader or something?
A beta reader.
Okay, I got you. I try not to say anything.
Okay.
Just from what I remember from my creative writing classes, which was there's so many people that get up in front and they try to explain it all ahead of time, you know, and it was that whole thing of, you know, don't say anything, just let them experience. So I try not to. And sometimes I'm biting my tongue because I really want to tell you something, but I try not to. So if it's my own story, I'm usually just excited to share it with people, but I really try to restrain myself from saying anything about, you know, what the, I don't want to say, like, here's the point, or here's what I was thinking about, but instead I went with this or whatever. I just try to, here's what I wrote. Check it out.
Julia, what is your experience with that?
I've only used beta readers, not as much as I should really. But I think I'm sort of like Dave. I've try to keep and just let the story speak for itself in most cases. I think there have been times when I've had to talk out the ending with people, trying to go, like, you know, if I'm stuck or something and trying to figure out things. And that's more of a danger for me because I'm one of those people who doesn't like to outline because I get kind of scared that I will feel like I've already told that story, so I don't need to.
Oh yes.
Don't need to finish that, and it's kind of talking out sometimes the plots, causes problems.
I think we're kind of transitioning from formal endings to process finishing, because I do, and I think especially when I write longer stuff now, and because I'm a little spoiled because I have really good, like I have Sigrid, who is very good at, and Jen both are really good in different ways at talking through, what the plot's going to be. But I do sometimes I'm like, okay, I want this to be the story where XYZ happens. And so then as I'm like, okay, today I hit the point, and then I sent Jen an email. I'm like, you will. I have finally gotten to the point where character A punches character B, which I know you've been waiting to happen. But then there's also there'll be times when I'm sending either a story or a part of a story to the beta. And which also a second reader, whatever you want to call that, but to the person who's proofreading for me. And sometimes I will deliberately not say, okay, this is a twist or this is a surprise or something else that happened, because I want that to make sure that it works in the story. And then I usually do try at the end to have somebody read the whole thing who hasn't been in on my process the whole time, but I don't always get around to that.
Yeah.
Now that you mention that, yeah, I think there have been instances where if I don't know, if I'm not confident in my ending, I may call up one of my other writer friends or something like that, and I may just ask them, like, here's what I'm trying to write, and I'm just not sure, and I'll just try and get feedback. But usually that's not a written form, like, here's half a story, I'm not sure where. It's just more, here's what I'm thinking about doing. You know, what do you think about this? And some of that is even me just talking it out loud, because you can start to hear where it falls apart. Or sometimes where it does work. And so there have been a number of times where I probably made that call and been like, so I'm really trying to make this happen, but I'm not sure. But if I did this,
yes.
And then the wheels start clicking and they didn't even need to do anything, but they were there for me, you know. So that's definitely something that has happened. And it's not a routine thing. It's just, you know, if I get stuck, I will talk to people about what I'm working on, because I just need that. I need to talk it out. And so, any one of those friends could be on the other end of that, just, offering suggestions. But if I've written a whole piece, I try not to say anything.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that, now I'm going to blank. great. Yeah, utterly blanked.
Sorry.
We're having a lot of pauses on a show about endings. There's something, some message in there. Yeah. We don't know where we're going with this. You guys have to realize, I mean, the listeners have to realize that a lot of times we pick these subjects because we're trying to figure this out as we go along.
Yes.
We're not the show that dispenses advice. We're the show that goes, I don't know what to do right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I will ask a general, you know, does the ending work? Does it, mm-hmm. does it make sense? More of a general question. Question rather than, like, I mean, at least then they can have the beta reader or whoever can have a specific thing to hone in on and look at. But that might be a question to ask after they've given the initial feedback or whatever, right. necessarily.
Yeah.
Or, and I've also had the experience of like being online with somebody who was like reading something I'd written and just like I hadn't told them anything about it and then getting the, ooh, oh, this just happened. Oh my God, I can't believe they did that. So that's kind of fun. I don't like it's hard to get that in any other kind of medium unless you're just reading something out loud to somebody mm-hmm. and they I guess my friend could like physically be in the room reading my manuscript, but somehow I'd be nervous about that. But if yeah, I'm like doing something else and she's like reading through it and like making comments as she goes, that's kind of awesome.
So. That is an awesome feeling. When you said that, it just reminded me, this is a complete tangent because not about an ending at all. But when I was in high school, for whatever reason, you know, I was always fascinated with comic books. I was a big comic book reader. And so at one point I just started writing and drawing my own little like comic book. And it was just on like, you know, 8.5 by 11 computer paper and just penciling it. And it was this total ripoff kind of story. It was called Psycho Ninja. And but it was like this, it started off as a sort of joke, and then it just became this utterly serious epic. But there was a point, you know, where I would come to school and I would have pages I had drawn and I would hand them out, and people would be like, oh, I gotta see what happens next. Okay, oh. And so that reader, that immediate feedback of doing something sort of serialized like that, even if it was just page by page, it's really fascinating. I mean, that really kept me going. So that's something that's very fun. So I definitely, that definitely informs how I treat people when I definitely need other people to be giving me feedback after I finish something or while I'm working on something.
So what is the worst point in the process to realize your story has the wrong ending?
Oh my gosh. The probably worst point?
I'm just looking for anecdotes about having to scramble to change endings perhaps or something like that.
I think I'm most terrified about getting to the middle and then realizing that if that's the ending, then the whole beginning doesn't work and you have to go back and change everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. I can't think of an example where that happened to me. I think that's always the fear.
I've actually had more often. I'm like, okay, I'm going to change a beginning.
Because
of the ending.
I've had several nanos where I've started and gone, oh, that's not how I should have, that's not where I should have started, or that's not where I should, how I should have approached it or something. Unfortunately, by the ending, you're sort of like, I mean, I hate to say the mad rush to get to 50,000 at that point. You're sort of, it's less. After a certain point, you're not caring about the story or whatever. You're just trying to get to that point on that last day or whenever. So it's. I think that's a point where the writing structure starts to fall apart a little.
Mm-hmm. But I think that Nano is good for that. It is about breaking down those criticisms, you know, as you're getting to and overcoming that fear of like, oh my God, what if this isn't the right ending or anything like that? And it's just like, no, I'm going to give it an ending.
Yes.
And then, I think to me, and I know a lot of people have their different thoughts about NaNoWriMo and if it's good or bad, but I think that's key for a lot of writers is to just write it and not be afraid to write that shitty first draft and just write the ending, even if it ends up being the shitty ending, you know? And then, because you can always change it later. It's not like it's being published the next day, you know? So I mean, to me, you know, as we're talking about endings, there's always that, you know, ending something like a NaNoWriMo ending that first draft and then preparing to, now I need to go think about revision. I need to look at the whole thing as I have it written, beginning, middle, and end, and then see if each of those pieces holds up, and then do I need to go and change the beginning? Do I need to change that ending? You know, I mean, if you've got it all down, then I think it's easier to find the place where you need to sort of block off what you wrote and then, you know, kind of start forming that off ramp that goes off a different direction, you know, or just fix up that beginning and make sure it flows seamlessly into that ending. And that's, I mean, I think that's another show that we're going to talk about soon is revisions, but I think that's kind of where we head after we get to our initial ending.
And then sort of the converse, I guess, to having the wrong ending, how stubborn are you about trying to get to the ending that you came up with?
When there's other published material, I'm very stubborn about it.
Yeah, right. I guess
if I'm trapped by my own continuity, I'm very stubborn.
Yes,
but,
yeah, I guess that too.
Yeah. But that said, I mean, I think that always challenge your ending and make sure, because I think the danger there is to be so steadfast in your opinion that that's the right ending that you're not allowing yourself other possibilities when you hit that middle part. Mm-hmm. You know, you're forcing something to go towards that ending when you're cutting yourself off. This is a double-edged sword. Any writing advice like this is a double-edged sword because, you know, you have to make decisions at some point. I mean, that's what Nano is all about, right? You don't have any time to think about it, so you just make split decisions because maybe you're the writer who will not make decisions because you see the infinite possibilities and you can't narrow it down to one pathway,
Yeah, and that drove me crazy during Nano because a lot of time, this last Nano especially, because there were so many different, you know, as you say, so many different off-ramps and so many different exits that I could take on this story. And after a certain point, I just said, okay, you just have to concentrate on one and get through this. That was sort of the focus of, you know, after a certain point, I had to stop thinking about the different permutations and come up with one that I was satisfied enough to get me through in November.
Right. And that's always a trick, right? Because then the flip side of that is, you know, did I pick the wrong one and I wasted all that time writing it to an ending that's not the best ending? And that's, there's no right answer, you know, because you need to make decisions at a certain point and you have to have a little bit of trust in yourself. You know, that's the trick. I mean, there's no real answer. I mean, unless we, for our next NaNoWriMo, we all write a choose your own adventure. I think that may be the key. Do the infinite pathways, or at least do seven of them.
No.
But seriously, I mean, I think that is the real trick of all of this is, you know, who's to say what's better? The purpose of Nano is to basically, just make sure that you pick one and stick with it and see it through to the end, you know, and maybe you have to go back and do route two next and see it all the way through to the end. But you know what? That's going to get you the stronger piece at the end, and you know, when you're done with it.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any finishing thoughts on endings?
Final thoughts.
A pithy summation.
Seems like we're saying there's no one answer. We all have different ways of working. Each project is different. And there are an infinite number of pathways to get to your ending. Hope that helps. Go write.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
and the readers will probably not necessarily agree with your ending.
Right.
But that's a whole different part of it.
Any of you have a instance of getting to an ending that you loved? To end on a positive note.
In our own writing.
Yes, in your own writing.
One of the things I loved about my first Nano was it had a beginning, middle, and end. A lot of my others, they're in various stages of chaos, but I liked the symmetry of the ending tied in with the beginning, and it felt right to me. Now, not to say that somebody else might look at it and go, oh, God, that's so trite or that's so cute. I hate when somebody says your ending's cute. I mean,
oh, dear.
It's sort of like, oh, great. Uh-huh. I'm one of those writers.
Cute like the relationship or just that it all ties up nicely?
I think it's cute and sort of a... I don't necessarily think that it's, gosh, wow, you know, they don't sound very excited about it. Uh-huh. It's just cute. It's just like, it's sort of not, you know, not good, not bad. It's sort of meh in between kind of thing to me. I don't know if that's really the way they intended it.
I don't know, because I don't know that I would describe a piece of writing that way. So now I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering, were you going for like sort of a punchline? So it's like, oh, that's cute, or was it more like it's not quite clever enough to be clever? So I'm going to say cute. Like, what's the? I don't get that one.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What about you, Dave?
You know, I'm trying to think of something. I think most of the short pieces that I've seen through to the end, they feel right to me, you know, if I've done anything with them. And I'm usually very happy with those. Longer pieces, you know, I've co-written a couple screenplays with my writing partner, Jeremy, and we didn't know where we were going with them. And I've been really happy with, there was one where we did a murder mystery. And it was one where we really started, again, writing, not knowing exactly where we were going to go. And about halfway through, we had to figure out, okay, this is the killer. Now we need to make sure everything works correctly and go back to the beginning and get it to the end. And I was very happy with the way that one wrapped up. I mean, I felt solid to me. So, and then also, I think, like, especially the first season of Wormwood, I think I set out, I knew it was going to be this sort of dark mystery, and it was going to end with, here's why you're here, Dr. Crow, but it's not really very satisfying of an answer, but it's the answer you get, you know, and I thought that was a really cool ending, and it just fit to me with the whole tone of the series, and I was very proud of that.
So for Julia, it's basically just having an ending, you know, having all three parts of the story sort of that are symmetrical. And Dave, for you, it's having the ending that you planned and you worked to get, you know, to get there. And so that's interesting. I think that when I think about like ending a story that I really liked, I think of one that was one of these somebody's got a secret stories, and I didn't actually know what the secret was until I read the last line. And then when I got to it, I was like, oh, that's what they were, you know, that there was this sort of past relationship between these other characters. And it really actually, I realized that I kind of stole the structure from the Wharton story that I said. But I just really liked the experience of sort of getting around to like, oh, I now the reason that this one character has been somewhat manipulative throughout the story is that she had this sort of past relationship.
So in a way for you, it's that self-discovery because you didn't know what you were writing until you got to the end and you're like, that's it.
But then that could only work in a short. I don't, you know, I wouldn't want to try that. Because I think, because if that happened with, you know, the 40,000 word piece I'm writing right now, if that happened and like the end changes everything, I'm like, I have to rewrite this whole fucker, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But with short fiction, it's more like you could find the pieces that were there all along and get it to work.
So yeah, I think my closest example to that would be the Smitty story, because it was a similar thing. It's like, I didn't know quite where it was going, and all of a sudden I realized, okay, here's what this is about. This is what this story is really about. And then that brought it home for me. So yeah, I totally get that. And I definitely get that as that self-discovery on your part with that one. It was like, oh, here's why I'm writing this. And it made sense. I'm sure there are plenty of that you had where that didn't pan out. You know, we all do. But that's a great feeling when it does.
And that's when you do like the Chekhov ending. That's just very, very, very complicated and ambiguous. But sometimes I'm like, oh, there really is something that's cool. Okay.
That's great. So should we wrap this up and share our information and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, and I was looking for what the Deceptionist email contact is, and I can't remember it. Okay, so our website is thedeceptionist.org. Or you can Google us because we're the only ones on the internet. What is the Facebook information, Dave?
I believe you can either search on Facebook, Deceptionist, and you'll find us, or I believe it is facebook.com/deceptionist. Ooh, I'm not even sure anymore. let me see really quick, since I have a computer in front of me. I believe it's just Deceptionist. No, it's not. It's not.
It's the Deceptionist?
Yeah, it's the deceptionist.
Kelly yep, is our Kelly is our social media person.
Yeah, she always knows what it is. We fumble around without her. No, yeah. So facebook.com/thedeceptionist. But if you search, you're going to find us. We're the only deceptionists, like Caroline uh-huh. said, who are out there. And then our Twitter, actually, that one does not have a the on it. That is @deceptionist. And, you know, please leave us comments about the shows on that Twitter and also questions. We usually post a tweet asking for questions about the shows before we record. So that's where the one from Cammy came tonight. So that was great. So yeah, definitely there. You can also post in our show's feed, the comment section on our shows. And we also encourage people to leave us a review on iTunes, because that certainly helps us out too.
Julia, do you have any anything you want to plug or any contact info to share?
You can find me as Mazelle on Twitter. That's usually the best place to find me. And other than that, that's the main thing I could main contact info.
But Julia often joins us in on these conversations we have about writing that pop up on Twitter. So
yes,
friend the deceptionist, and also follow the deceptionist and follow Julia, and you'll be in for some good conversations.
And Dave, what's your current project status right now?
So my project status, let's see. I just turned in the lettered pages for the first issue of Sparrow and Crow, The Demoniac of Los Angeles. So that's the Kickstarter campaign that I've talked about on here. I have sent it to the publisher. They are preparing up like a preview book for some retailers and stuff like that. But that one should go into the solicitations in April, which means that it would be in comic shops a couple of months after that, like 3 months after that. So we're on track there. And then I think that's about it right now. I think I talked about it on The Last Deceptionist, but my How Smitty Smokes a Cigarette story went on Popcorn Fiction.
Yes, still congratulations.
There. Thank you. Yes, that one is still on there. It's, you know, now a few old, but if you look at like their archive, you'll see it on there. And what else am I working on? I've been dealing with a lot of other stuff right now. So it's like production and marketing for the comic book, and then like a bunch of work stuff. So I've been on a tear, but not too much I can announce yet. So that's where I am.
We will be waiting with bated breath for other announcements. And I have that lengthy story that I will hopefully be done talking about when we're back here next month. And then we can have another topic next month. And with that, I believe we can sign off until next time. Thank you for listening to The Deceptionist. Bye.
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 Welcome to the... Okay, don't put that on there.